Well, good morning. My name is Rodney Peterson. I'm staff with EDUCAUSE, and I'm your convener for this morning's session. We're going to jump right into it, but before we do that, just the normal reminders to complete the online evaluations. This particular session is also being broadcast online, so later, if there is any questions or discussions, we'll ask the speakers to repeat the questions so we can make sure we get them captured for our online audience. Our speakers today are Linda Baer, who's a Senior Program Officer for Post-Secondary Success with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and Michael Offerman, who's the president of Capella University. So let me turn it over to Linda and Michael to get us started.
Good morning. Happy to have all of you here with us. Michael and I are here to present on setting the national agenda. We have Don Norris also here, who's been our colleague and compatriot on developing what we're calling the National Agenda for Action Analytics. We have a lot of people that are particularly interested in setting the stage for improving what we do in higher education. And I think the kickoff this morning was a great opportunity for us to hear about change and why change is important. But it's not going to be just by choice that we're going to be asked to do these changes. And so everywhere from the president, by 2020, America will again have the highest proportion of college graduates, to a White House summit that happened to feature community colleges recently that brought businesses and philanthropy and federal and state policy leaders and colleges and students together to try to improve upon what's going on, with focus on a variety of areas, including pathways to baccalaureates and particularly community college completion. But also, this is costing a lot of money, and I think we should continue to ask ourselves, what cost failure? We take students in, we take their money, we say somehow or another they're ready, or we put them into developmental to get better ready, and what cost failure? And so I think that's what we have to keep thinking about, and how do we know that? How do we get the data, the actual data, the metrics, to be able to do better? Some other things that are going to be coming along happen to be the Department of Labor with Skills for America's Future, and there's a URL for that if you're interested, but more resources going out to improve the training and capacity of our people in the workforce. We have the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation putting major money behind this effort, with their goal, double the numbers of low-income adults who are in post-secondary degrees or credentials by age 26 by 2025. And I put all those words down there because that's their goal. Lumina's got the big goal to have 60% of Americans hold high-quality 2- and 4-year degrees by 2025. And then you've got the National Association of System Heads talking about having the gap by 2015. All of these have metrics related to them. And we're going to talk a little bit about why that's important, that we continue to talk about data metrics, and the capacity. So we've got a little outline here that's going to talk about what we call action analytics today and what it requires, some of the connecting of the dots that we think will help in describing and setting this agenda, and also then provide examples. We're going to make sure we have time for those examples, so we'll move ourselves more quickly through this as needed to make sure that you get a chance to see some of the examples we're talking about. With that, I'm going to move to one example just to let you know what's coming, and that has to do with the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities that worked hard on putting together a dashboard. One thing is to have the data. Two is to mine the data. Three is to have the right people being able to use that data for decision-making. And then I would say four is a visualization, a way to readily access the data and talk about it. The Board of Trustees for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities wanted a dashboard, a very visible dashboard that talked about how were the campuses doing in the strategic goals that they had in mind. And so this is a little bit of what that looks like, and we'll talk about it a little more. The basis of this comes down to predictive modeling. Business and industry have been about this for a very long time, and a lot of the work that we've been looking at goes back to what Thomas Davenport and Jeannie Harris have done, competing on analytics. And so predictive modeling helps us get smarter about what we're doing in terms of where we invest, with what kinds of opportunities for students, what kinds of interventions that really can make significant differences. So we're really looking at probability theory. With that, we've got a few definitions. Academic analytics combines both large data sets, statistical techniques, and modeling to produce actionable intelligence. And that's the goal of what we're talking about. You've got lots of data. You can access data. I don't know how long it takes you to get the data if you wanted to call up and access the data or email to get the data. But we need to make it far more readily accessible. So the basics are these. Rapid conversion of those large data sets to information that can be pushed to advisors, faculty, staff, administrators, and learners to drive what? Learner success and institutional productivity. That's what we're going to be held accountable for more and more as we move along. And finally, to drive learner success, which how do we know they're successful if we don't know what the outcomes were to begin with, what the persistence is, and what the completion rates are? Today, the vendors that do our learning management systems are assisting us and giving us tools that help faculty and students and advisors know better how students are doing at any point in time. We also need to be about driving the costs down, not only the costs of failure so that more people succeed, but driving the costs down so that we're not pricing people out of being able to have the dream of going to college and succeeding. So with that, we've got a few tools we're going to talk about, and it really has to do with a mindset change. It's got to be that from the leadership all across the whole organization, from boards, from chancellors and presidents, but many of you who are CIOs in the audience, or the chief academic officers, or the student affairs officers, HR, finance, across the board, we all have to be in this together. It's not a academic thing or a student affairs thing only. And it's not, okay, IT just make sure we've got some sort of program that works here. It's all of us being in it together, and we've got to be about that continuous quality improvement while we do it. It's about accountability and transparency, and Mike will talk a little more about transparency and the importance of that. It's really reimagining and reconstructing our assumptions, our fundamental assumptions, policies, and practices. I think we've been based on build it and they'll come. It's been based on a survival of the fittest. You get in, and it's your business to succeed or fail. And it's based on those that succeed happen to be the ones that worked in the kind of model that we were teaching to or instructing to. Today, we've got a lot of different things that can help us blow that open and bring about education and deeper education to more people. So it's really data-driven improvement that we've got to work towards. So with that, I think I'm going to turn it over to Mike.
Thanks, Linda, and I'll add my good morning and assure you we're not going to bounce up and down a whole lot. We found out the lavaliers are hardwired, so they don't give you a lot of flexibility. What I want to do now is just say, so the question really is, so why are we up here talking about action analytics at this point in time? Linda's already outlined the fact that there are some increasing expectations that we produce more graduates and increase attainment rates. And I don't like to read slides, so what I'll tell you is that you can see what we've got posted up here is that really we're reacting to a convergence of a number of things. Part of it is that bottom bullet, which talks about the things that Linda already covered. We've got the president, we've got major foundations, and we've got others that really want to see us do more in terms of attainment rates. At the same time that we've got expectations increasing for accountability, and that includes learning outcomes. It includes getting to better data. One of the real problems we have in higher education in this country right now is that we don't have good data that leads us to bad places. All of this is happening during the time of the worst economic downturn we've seen in decades in this country. But there's an opportunity here, and that's the stuff that you folks all work with, and that is the fact that we've got opportunities to take advantage of increased data that's available to us in part because of more delivery and blended or online delivery, and we also have the opportunity to do greater things in terms of analytics. And we'll talk a little bit about those as we get into the examples. This slide I'm not going to spend much time on. It's really trying to drive home a point, and that point is that this economic situation that we're in is not going to shift quickly. This is going to be with us for a while. So at the very time that we're being asked to increase completion rates, to create greater gains in terms of student success, we have to be doing that in a time when our own resources are declining, and we have to achieve excellence. And we're also being expected to become more efficient as we become more effective. And hopefully, as Linda already cited, our things are about increasing student success, increasing institutional productivity. One aspect of institutional productivity would hopefully be that we could bring prices down for our students. So what we believe, and the we in this is Don Norris, whom Linda already recognized, Linda, myself, and others that were working on trying to figure out where do we go with all of this. We think there are tremendous opportunities. We believe that it's clear that the various constituencies are expecting more of us. Again, simultaneously to do better with less and to gain various efficiencies while we achieve excellence. And we believe that what we call action analytics, which is taking advantage of the data that has been laying there on the floor unused up until now, is one way for us to be able to do those things simultaneously. We know that we need to learn from one another. And before I came in the room this morning, I was chatting with Vernon Smith from Rio Salado College, and I said, you know, sometimes when we get up and talk about what could be done with things like predictive modeling, people assume that that's going to happen at big institutions or institutions that have lots of resources. But if you aren't aware of what's going on at Rio Salado, a community college, you ought to take a look. And we're learning from them, they're learning from us, and that's the real beauty of what we're about here in terms of trying to drive a national agenda. And that is what we decided. We really need to start talking about action analytics and bring meaning to what it's all about. What we do, and I think of this as a kaleidoscope slide, is try to bring together some things that we often talk about, but separately, in silos. We talk about assessment, but we don't connect it necessarily to analytics. We talk about accountability, accreditation, and what we're trying to do is to connect the dots involved with all of those things. And what is required of us is to become more specific, to become more concrete, to begin to really drive metrics that are meaningful. How are we measuring things? What targets are we trying to get at? What assurances are we trying to provide not only policymakers but our own students, our own customers, if you will? What are the practices that we can share with one another as we learn together how to become more efficient and more effective, how to drive up learner success, drive up institutional productivity? So what we've done, working together, this is initially Capella University along with the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, was to press for more information, sharing, and bringing together thought leaders around action analytics to figure out how we might proceed, how we might begin to share. And we've done, with the support of the Gates Foundation, two national invitational symposia. From those, this is really the leadership of Don Norris. We've created an observatory that you can see at the edgeofoneworld.com site. I would encourage you to go there and look for action analytics. And what we're really talking about is simply putting analytics to work. And we think there are some critical questions that all of us should be asking ourselves at our institutional level, but we're also really interested in what can we begin to share, what can we begin to learn, what can we begin to know as we go across institutions and across sectors. And I'll talk a little bit more about the fact that we're really very much cross-sector in the work that we're doing. But do we know what outcomes data is being collected at our own institutions? Does it include information on whether or not learning is occurring? How is that data being used, and who is it shared with? These become very critical questions. One of the things that we advocate for is moving data to information, information that can be acted upon, getting it out to people who are not power users. Our concern is that the data and the information has been held within the realm of the institutional researcher, perhaps others like that, and not out to the people who can really make a difference. Is there a way for us, and I'm at an online institution, to take the huge amounts of data that we have, convert it very quickly to actionable information, get it out to advisors, get it out to faculty, get it out to the students themselves in order to enable people to help students to first persist and ultimately to complete in programs and demonstrate that they've learned what we had in mind for them. One of the big issues that we have concern about is, do we understand the points at which we're losing students? And if you've been following the media this past week, there's a lot of concerns about people coming in and leaving before they even conclude or at the point they conclude their first year. And what that really is, the cost, what's really people are trying to get at is, what is the cost of society for that? What are we really spending on that? So the question is, what tools do we have to begin to understand better those points where the student is experiencing things that drive her to leave the institution or to simply not return? Do we understand what the student is experiencing? Have we calculated in our own cases what the cost of student failure really is and what might be the opportunity and the savings, if you will, or the gain, the value add, if we're able to help students to ultimately succeed? So what we're really trying to do, borrowing from, and I can't read this slide, but anyway, it doesn't even show it, so we need to acknowledge this. Davenport and Harris, right. We're using this. This is actually Davenport and Harris's intellectual property. But what we're trying to describe here is that we need to get beyond mere reports. We need to get beyond deep dives. We need to start understanding how to forecast what's going to happen. We will talk a bit about predictive modeling and how powerful that can be in helping students to ultimately complete. And ultimately, what we want to get to is optimization. So with, let's see, I guess I have one more slide, and then we'll do one more bounce, and Linda will be back up here. But what we're going to do for the examples part, and we did this a few weeks ago, and people said, you spent so much time on the lead-in, when are you going to get to examples? So hopefully we've talked fast this time, and we're getting to the examples a little more quickly. We're going to look at the MinSKU dashboard. We're also going to look at the Capella University Learning Outcomes Assessment System and some talk there that I'll provide in terms of predictive modeling. I do want to talk about a statewide effort that is truly where I'll talk about cross-sector as we get out to Minnesota Action Analytics, and then Linda's going to wrap as we talk about, well, she's not literally going to wrap. She's going to wrap up. have you ever seen Linda wrap?
I've seen that before.
Well, we could do that. We may need to get to that, you know, if you all start napping on us, then we're going to move to the wrap. So we're going to talk a little bit about Purdue University's Signals program, which was actually part of our initial symposium that we did now back in late 2009, so about roughly a year ago. Linda, it's your turn.
Thank you. There's sort of a picture image in that wrapping. Some of you that know, you know, I'm kind of a reserved sort of person, but, you know. Oh, well. Okay. We won't go there right now. So the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. We knew as a system, and now this system is over 15 years old, and those that are in the audience that know Minnesota know that that was a rocky start and kind of a bumpy continuation of putting the technical colleges, community colleges, and state universities together. And the beginning issue was how do you put those three sets of data together that had been defined and treated and used and acted on, centralized, decentralized in all different ways. So begin with that as an issue. And then go fast forward for a while to say that a board came along and decided to do major strategic planning, which they love to do regularly. And then saying, well, that was nice, but Linda, when are you going to report on what we accomplished? How do we know what's going on in all of this? We put the words on paper. Now, make it mean something. Make it actionable. And they wanted to actually see how things were going. And not only did they want to see it, they wanted it very transparent and wide open to the public. And so we went to the strategic plan, and we got the increase access, opportunity, success, okay, increase high-quality programs and services, okay, do economic development to improve competitiveness in the state. Sound familiar to any of you? This sounds like what, okay. And then we go to four, which was their new innovate to meet current and future educational needs. Now, being kind of a futurist by trade, first I said, wow, they said innovate. And then I go, oh, no. What do you think 15 trustees might mean by innovate? Well, at least 50 different things probably. And so actually I think that they're still working on this. Daryl, are they still working on this one? I don't know that we actually have measures really down pat on that one. Well, then they decided that lately that they better pay more attention to the current here and now and went in to ensure the long-term viability of public higher education in Minnesota. So they did that as well. Well, what did it take? Some really good data thinkers. And so the IR director for the system got the IR directors and important people around the state on campuses to kind of hunker down and say, okay, what would some of these look like if we operationalized them? And you'll see up on the board, some of these look pretty standard. Percent change in enrollment, net tuition and fees as a percent of median income, licensure pass rates. Some of these were just, they were proxies to help us while we kept working on how do you measure some of these things, all the way down to related employment for graduates and so on. Well, the dashboard looks like this. This is what they wanted. They wanted dials. And not only did they want dials, they wanted dials that said meet expectations. So you had to figure out what meeting expectations meant across technical, community, and state universities, across small and large, across rural and urban, across very diverse populations. So this is what the group came up with. Now, some of them are not lit up yet because they're still, as far as I know, under construction right now, like well, what do you want to measure about partnerships, or what do you want to measure about high quality learning, kind of a nemesis. If any of you have been given the assignment, tell us how to define high quality learning. People have spent decades on that one. But this at least is a device, a visual, and this can pull up each and every campus. It can pull up the campuses by college category or by university category, because we know they're not all the same whatsoever in terms of how you measure some of the, how you might look at these things. So, where did the thresholds go? Now, this is sort of the case study on how do you use data once you have it. For one thing, the board or chancellor had a goal or target. When I said what meets expectations or what exceeds or what doesn't, how'd you get to that measure, given you had so many things to think about, like enrollment increases or licensure pass rates or so on? So there are a variety of ways the measure was then validated. So for some of the measures, the board said, we want a facilities index of X, and that's what meets expectations. And they just said, make it so. For licensure pass rate, it ended up being an external reference across the other state, the rest of the people in the state, the rest of the institutions in the state, and the pass rates they were experiencing in nursing, for example. There were regression models for some of them that predicted related employment rates based on program mix. Gets a little complicated there, but it was an agreed-upon measure. And finally, in some of the cases, it was a historical reference to persistent rates. How have you been doing in the past? How are you doing now? What do you hope to be doing in the future? So you got to realize once you get into the data, what are the performance thresholds and measures that are going to be important to those to whom you're going to report. So another variation of this is a very robust kind of a dashboard that allows you to see where are people. And I think I forgot to mention that we went totally public. We did a web-based press conference, and do you think that was a little scary? We had to call the campuses that were in the red categories, and we had to say to them, be ready. You're going to be public for the world to see. Don't get worried, but you're going to have some answers if you happen to be in the doesn't meet expectation category. And so we talked to them. We had talking points, so they wouldn't be surprised if their local newspaper called up. Frankly, I don't think any local newspapers called up, which could be troubling to some extent. Here we are being really transparent, and we worried about being transparent. And then we became transparent, and I don't know. There it was. So, you know, that's what you have to kind of contend with. There's far more documentation that you can drill down so that you can see trends. You can get the definitions to the very nth degree. What does this measure mean? We have a comment section that we made sure campuses answered, particularly if they didn't meet expectations. It would be nice if they commented if they exceeded expectations. Wouldn't it have been nice if we were worrying that the press might say, how did you exceed expectations? You know, that didn't really happen either. So I don't know. You know, you can take a lot of time to get to this place, and then there it sits. Well, okay. Then we come to how do you make it more systemic? How is it that this sustains? It doesn't just go away with the next board or with the next chancellor or with the next legislature or whatever. How do you make it a part of your organization? So first it was aligned with the strategic plan that both the system was bound to and the campuses were bound to. It required that we had analytical tools that the institutions took seriously and could go back. And so when we were doing evaluations of presidents, I could ask them, wow, you really improved on this measure. What kind of interventions were you doing for students to improve what was going on? And down at the bottom, you're going to see that the chancellor was held accountable for the performance, the vice chancellors, and the presidents. So they were held accountable, and there were incentives for meeting the goals, frankly. We can talk about that more if you'd like to. So with that, that's most of, I think, what was going on with the Minnesota example. Please, if you've got some questions, burning questions, write them down. We'll take some time for them. But that's one way that we went about at a systemic level, a big picture level, looking at data and data accountability.
Okay, we're going to do it one more time after this, where we're going to bounce up and down. But You know, actually, we could just do questions, too. So if you have a burning question, let us know. And if you want to disagree with Linda, that's okay.
And then I might rap. I don't know. You got to be careful here.
So the unstated part is it's okay to disagree with me, too. But anyway, so here's the learning outcomes assessment model from Capella. And I need to do a credibility slide because you may be sitting there saying, Capella who? And so all this is telling you is that this learning assessment system that I'm describing is something that has gotten external recognition both nationally and internationally. We're really proud of the CHIA Award this year for the work that we've done regarding student learning outcomes. But let me, these slides are not going to be graphic and pretty and colorful like Linda's, where they're mainly to guide me so I don't forget parts of it. But basically what we've done is at our bachelor, we offer bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees. We're still working on the doctoral degrees, but bachelor's and master's, what we've done is to take all of these to what we call a LOAP, which is a learning outcomes assessment plan. Every program has a plan which is based on what are the program level outcomes that we want a student to be able to demonstrate when she leaves this program. And we work with people in business, industry, the profession. So we'll work with professional associations, industry associations, wherever we need to go to figure out what today would be required of a bachelor in a particular discipline or a master in that discipline in order to be successful in their career and for their employer. And I'm going to tell you right now, there is nothing radical about what we're doing. It's pretty much just straightforward curriculum development, but I am going to talk a little bit about some surprises we encountered as we put this into place. Basically, what we do is once we establish what the program learning outcomes are to be, then we're able to plan backwards from those outcomes back to the first experience that the student has with us. And we're able to then define where are they going to learn certain competencies, when are they going to get the kind of learning that will lead to those competencies and the ability to not only know but to be able to do, and how do those build ultimately to the program level learning outcomes. Fairly straightforward stuff, but what we're able to do with that in an environment where we're delivering our programs online is to create very graphic visual curriculum maps that allow the student now, as well as the faculty, to understand what's going to be happening. What is that experience going to be like? When are they going to be learning X or Y or Z? And when we moved to this system, what we did was to look at what we were doing before compared to what we were going to be doing after this. And what we found was absolutely nauseating levels of redundancy, because every faculty member, for example, wanted to teach about leadership in their particular field. And what we realized is we needed to bring some expertise in. We like to talk in higher education about the fact that faculty may never have been taught how to teach. And that, you know, okay, we'll accept that, but how many of them have been taught to do assessment? And how many of them have actually learned how to do curriculum development? So we when we plan out a program now, we not only have faculty members working with people who understand design or instructional design, although we don't use that term, we also have a curriculum specialist, which was a tough one because we had to go out and create what this meant, but someone who can look end-to-end at a program and understand the flow as directed by the faculty, but so that it can clearly lead to a map that allows the student to understand where they're headed. And we also have assessment specialists, because what we do is to, at every point that we have a concept, a competency, or possibly even an outcome that we're trying to get at, we embed measurement, and that's what this we've got this new language talking about LOAPs and FEAMs at our place, but FEAM is simply the fully embedded assessment model. And what that does is to begin to organize the data that we're producing in ways that it's much more useful to us. It brings a discipline to what it is that we're measuring. In order for it to work, we had to really establish rubrics that the faculty would adhere to. Developed by the faculty, the question is, are they going to adhere to it? So let me just tell you a surprise, because one of the things that we're very interested in, as all of you are, is how do you get students to persist so that ultimately they can complete? And so we brought in a national consulting firm, and they gave a report after they were there, and I was president at the time, and I got this report, and it said, these are your top five attrition factors at Capella. And I didn't know what to do with them, because they were things like, those who borrow more money are more likely to leave. Those who take more than two courses at a time are more likely to leave. It was like, so we don't let them take more than two courses and we don't lend them a lot of money, even though they may need to borrow in order to attend. It was just like, these are useless. So where that led, that, this is sort of a side story and I'll come back, but where that led us to is trying to get at multivariate analysis, which actually led us into predictive, the predictive modeling that we'll do, and I'll talk about that on the next slide. But another surprise for us was that there was nothing I could do with those 5 points. But I can tell you, even after we got into doing predictive modeling and so on, it was still hard to figure out what kind of thing could you push a button for and say, we're going to really make an adaptive change here, and it will lead to X points gain in terms of persistence. The only thing I can ever point to is the use of rubrics. If you, and I don't, there's no research on this, so now you're getting the Mike Offerman variation on why this happens. But I believe that what it's about is that, and by the way, we only serve people 25 and older, so we're dealing with adult students. If we give them a curriculum map that says this is the progress, this is the way you have to go, and we say this is the learning you're going to have in this particular term, in this particular course or set of courses, and these are the rubrics we're going to use to measure you, if we then follow through and adhere to our own rubrics and use those metrics, a couple of things are happening for them. Number one, they're gaining confidence, which is very important for adult learners. Number two, they're gaining trust that we're actually going to follow through, and it begins to create meaning for them and that safe area where, yes, you're going to tell me what you're going to measure and you're really going to do it, and then you're going to give me feedback on that. So basically, yes, please. We share them with the students because actually, if you were to go where I'd like to go, we'd share everything with as much as you possibly can because it does enable a student to take more responsibility for their own learning. We give them to the students in this case so that they can understand what's going to be asked of them. The self-monitoring is a side benefit. We didn't do it for that reason. Did I answer your question or did I talk around it? Yeah, okay, I understand. So the question is the rubric a measure of learning, if you will? I'm paraphrasing here, so I may not get it right. Is it to measure the faculty? Is it to measure the learning that's occurring? The rubric is intended to be, and is, in fact, what the faculty developed to say, here is what we want you to know and do to demonstrate that you have learned this competency, and here's how we're going to measure to show that you know and do. So it's really a measure of whether or not the student can demonstrate that they've learned what it was intended. In fact, what happens is you get some monitoring that goes on by the students because they're very unhappy if they go into the course, they've been given the rubric, and then some other measure is used. So did I finally get to what you wanted, what you were asking, or did I continue to talk? Well, I appreciate you interrupting. I usually like to applaud the first person that asks a question, and then I forgot to repeat it. So any others? Okay. I'll move on to the next slide then. And just simply say, this slide got changed a bit. It used to have all kinds of, it was an attempt at graphics, so I lost my only shot. Is it the next one? Okay. Oh, there, I'm feeling much more comfortable now. My weak attempt at graphics is there. Hey, this is just to say, what is it that we're trying to do in terms of criteria, concepts, competencies, outcomes, and so on. So, Linda, you improved on it. You actually had that in two slides. Bigger. Got it. I'm going to move on because what I really want to talk about is, and then allow time for some questions here after Linda has another shot, is, so, all right, so we've done this. We've got these outcomes plans. We've got the rubrics in place. We've got the curriculum maps. What really begins to happen once you're into this? I will tell you that it becomes more powerful than I thought it was. I thought it was pretty powerful when we were putting it together. It actually becomes more robust over time. Because what it allows us to do is to begin to understand learning occurring at two levels. And some people have come to our presentations and quizzed me because they think that when I'm talking about program level learning outcomes and I'm describing things that you have to do as an accountant, if you're in an accounting program, that I'm forgetting about the gen ed. I'm not. I'm taking that as table stakes. Every program, you have to be able to think critically, reason analytically, communicate effectively. That's a given, but what we're really trying to get at now is can we measure that at the level of, at the undergrad level, let's say at the major. Can you demonstrate that you're able to go out there and do things? And because we're serving adults and we're online and we're for-profit, we're really dealing with professional-type programs where people really are there because they want to go out and get a job or enhance the job prospects in a career they've already started. The kind of quality improvement that begins to flow from this becomes very important because we're able to now include in our predictive modeling whether learning is occurring. When we first started getting into predictive modeling, we were using all kinds of behaviors, but we didn't have a way to know at the beginning of a person's experience with us whether they were really learning or not. Because we could measure it in a capstone course, did they get it all and did it all come together? We still do that to see if there's a synthesis that's occurred. But we really needed to know at early stages in a given term whether or not learning was happening. Because once we know at the end of the course or the end of the program, it's a little bit late to take, you know, corrective action. And so our goal was to embed these assessments so that we could quickly determine what was going on with these students and be able to engage them in ways that we hadn't before. One of the outcomes that I would not have predicted, I actually thought that it would be advisors more than faculty who would be involved here, but it enhances the interaction, the engagement that goes on between faculty and their students. And then the rubrics continue to get better because we realize the mistakes we've made. And what happens when you're beginning to look at these learning outcomes across a number of faculty, across a number of courses, you're able to begin to do analyses that we couldn't do before when we hadn't structured for the data. You can begin to look across and see whether or not a particular learning module or a packet of learning is actually effective, how many people are going through that with different faculty and actually achieving or not, and can we then go fix when it's not happening. You can also go in a different direction, and you can look at, is this particular faculty member demonstrating issues in terms of people really getting it and being able to ultimately demonstrate the learning. Alerts is really our version of predictive modeling. I'm going to talk about this very quickly. We'd be happy to, again, to take questions as we go. But after that experience around the reasons that people left, and we tried to figure out, could we begin to look at a number of variables? We got really lucky, and we got a very talented individual. And some of you may have heard him present because he does present on this and goes much deeper than I do. And as Vernon and I were talking earlier, it's kind of hard to follow Alex because he's on another planet. Alex Uzverdzi is our person who really did this work. He's a concert pianist. He is a PhD in physics, and he worked for a credit card company before. So if you've ever had your credit card compromised, you know how quickly the credit card company can identify your different behaviors that would indicate that there may be a problem. That's what we were after. That's what we ended up with. So that in alerts, we're looking at a number of things, including initial assessments of learning, even in the first 2 weeks. And what you would hear Alex say, were he here, is that it's the first 2 weeks tell us everything. So by the first Friday, so you know the way we work with online is that you go Sunday midnight to Sunday midnight. By Friday of the first week, we know the students in by course, by name. We can tell which student is going to be in trouble, maybe a candidate to drop out, maybe needs some assistance. By the second week, we know whether or not they might come back the following term, but we also know what grade they're going to get. And this is at a very high level of accuracy. What we're able to do with that information then is proactive advising and reaching out to students to try to figure out, are there things that we could be doing here? Now, life, you know, happens. Sometimes there's not much we can do, but it does give us a way to begin to be helpful to those students. And we believe, now back to the point, you know, what are we? We're pushing. We would like to. I have to be careful about what's aspirational and what's real right now. Right now, we can get information to faculty. We can get information to advisors. What we are going to be doing is getting information directly in the hands of the students, because they're in the best position to know. And the issue there is one of how do you visualize this and how do you create something that is very simple, is not in any way received as criticism, but rather as help to them. Once we got into this, we said we can share this externally, and we think that's very important because we think that, yes, in the back. So the question is, and you're going to keep me honest on this one, what if you're not in an online environment? Do you need to be in the online environment in order to get the, pardon me? Or a hybrid environment. Can you produce enough data to be able to do this? Okay, so Linda is telling me that when she gets to the Purdue Signals project, it should show that. What you need to do is make sure we're being straight on that. First of all, I don't think you need to be in a fully online environment. Hybrid helps, but I think there's ways to do this. And we were doing predictive modeling before we had all of these assessments in place. There was another question over here. And would you say what institution you're at so we can brag about you? So make sure I get this right, because I'm going to repeat what you said. And the answer was, yes, you can do this. You're doing it at Western University of Health Sciences. And you went on to explain a little bit about what you're doing, which I'm not even going to attempt to do. Was there another hand over here? Oh, there is in the back. The question is, do we give grades, and do they duplicate what we're showing as far as the outcomes? Is that a fair restatement? Well, this gets kind of complicated, and on here I've got this reference to, is this the one? Yeah, College Choices for Adults. Go to that one, or go to our own site, which is a backup to that one. It's a little more extensive, which is called CapellaResults.com, and you'll see what we do. We really achieve a proficiency score. And that proficiency score is something that we use internally. Doesn't go on the transcript, doesn't even go to the student at this point, but we're able to measure, because we think that there are varying levels of proficiency where we can get much more exacting than a letter grade. And then what we have to do is be sure we're at least keeping somewhat honest on those letter grades to correlate to where we're showing the proficiency levels to be. Did I answer your question? Okay, thank you. All I'm going to say here is that the more we can be transparent externally, we believe the more strength will come from this. In other words, our view of action analytics is you've got to get the data right. You've got to set it up so that you're collecting the data you want. That's what all the theming and planning was about. Then once you get it, it's best not only to go to the student as well as the faculty and the advisor, but is there a way to begin to share this externally for a couple of reasons. Number one, it really makes you get really serious about making sure you're improving. Number two, for adults, there was nowhere to go to try to figure out what am I going to get from this institution versus another. So what College Choices for Adults, which is the Transparency by Design program, allows you to do is to compare one adult serving primarily online institution to another. You can read what we've got there. What I want to do is be fair to Linda and give her some time here, because we're not done yet. What we're going to and I've got one more slide, sorry. Let me talk about what we're doing in Minnesota. It's a statewide effort, and again, with using the support that we got from the Gates Foundation, we're building off of the relationship of Capella University, again, a for-profit university, primarily graduate level, but for-profit nonetheless, with a state college and university system that Linda's already said includes community colleges through comprehensive universities. Based on the first symposium, the University of Minnesota came in, and now we have our first independent college. And what we're really trying to do is do cross-sector, and by sector here, community college, Research One University, for-profit, public, independent, to be able to demonstrate that there is sharing that can occur across all of these sectors. We have a tremendous amount we can learn at Capella. We have some things we can share. And what we're focused on right now is our first effort together is going to be how can we begin to take data and improve what we're doing in advising. And I have to tell you, my honest reaction was this is going to be tough because we're probably doing advising very differently. And it's amazing the consistency of concerns, dreams, and what we want to accomplish with advising. So keep an eye on us. We're going to try to build on this and see what we can do across Minnesota to really show the collaborative nature of what you can accomplish once you're committed to action analytics. With that, I'm giving Linda 3 minutes.
And counting. Well, we have so much more we'd like to say, but I just wanted to give you one more example kind of to some of the questions. The Signals Project, if you want to Google it, this is out of Purdue University, John Campbell, at our first National Analytics Conference. We had him present, and what it is exactly whether you are online or on-site or hybrid. This was down to a course, a particular course. So we told you about system-level accountability and measurements and dashboards. We told you about within programs and rubrics that faculty have agreed upon. This one happened to be a chemistry course. And the faculty member connected with John Campbell and said, well, let's put something together that would help us understand a little better how each and every student is doing in this chemistry course at any point in time. And not only that, how do we know when they're succeeding or when they're in trouble or when they need some intervention? And so that's basically what this was. And it's a tool that now has gone to SunGard. And we're not necessarily talking about any product one way or another, but it's now been commercialized. And so SunGard has this product. But it does go to show that people with really good thinking capacities are putting more and more behind how do we better do the work for students no matter what course they're in. We're going to open this up, I think, now. Just you can see at any point in time then when you get what rubric you're talking about. Are you in a green light? A yellow light means, whoops, there's something going on here. And there are interventions that align, and red have even more interventions. So we just don't let students wander through the experience and have that high likelihood of failure. So really with that, we've got a lot of references here on the back, but we have just a few minutes for some more questions. Did you have any questions? Yes, go ahead. The question is, are we seeing any common data elements, or are we seeing any surprises? One of the things that particularly the Gates Foundation just launched is called Completion by Design, and what we're looking at are pathway models for success. And what Lumina and what Gates and a lot of the vast research has shown, you lose people sometimes at application, or they don't even apply because of the financial aid being so difficult. You lose them in developmental ed big time. There is a huge amount of loss there. A lot of effort, a lot of investment. Huge loss there. So what can you do about it? Well, you can modularize better. What part of developmental do you really need work on? Is it three components of 10, therefore you don't have to sit through a whole term or two or three and get tired of it all? I, of those that go through developmental, some of the statistics say only 30% ever go on. Of all those that go into developmental, and meanwhile, in some states, 40 to 50% of the students need developmental. So that's another place. The gateway courses, do they get into the gateway courses, or is there a waiting list till you're a junior or some such thing to get into a gateway course? And are they getting to the survival and success skills fast enough in those gateway courses? And then some of the financial issues of it just costs too much. So those are some of the things. Others have to do with better information about where do you go for help and when. But I'd like to repeat, I think, one of the things that Mike said, and it was listen to the students. We thought in Minnesota we had one of the best projects going in relation to supporting transfer. It was a big issue. And then we went and surveyed the students, because we went to DARS and CAS, Degree Audit Record System, course applicability. We did software across the system, and we found out the students didn't know how to access the tools, or didn't think about it, or went to their friends anyway for best information. So part of it is listen to the students, figure out what that adult learner's experiencing, or that returning vet, or that first traditional student that just, you know. And the other thing we found is upwards of 2 to 3 courses while in high school far more likely predicts that the student will go to college and be successful in college. So lots of good data between Lumina, Gates, others that are talking about what things make for better success. What the Completion by Design project is going to do is launch analysis of the pathway of students from their contact to graduation. Where are individual campuses losing those students, and what are the best intervention mechanisms to help keep them engaged and going? Really good question. Have we come to the place where we can get a return on investment for an intervention or a program that's been put in place? I would go to Washington State's IBEST program, which is a fabulous program where in a community college setting, they put a developmental ed instructor together with the content specialist in the same course, 5 times the likelihood of success coming back out of that program. Go Google that one. It is a fabulous project. Now, the barrier is it's 2 people instead of 1. If you got 5 times the return, let's talk about what's really going on with the resources here. So that's one. Modularizing developmentals, finding a lot of good success with it, but they're only in small bits and pieces and pilots is the problem. What we're looking for is massive, full institutional acceptance of this pathway model and building the interventions that work and finding out they don't always have to be very expensive. Learning community is another really good one that helps students to succeed. Thank you. You've been very patient. If you do have other questions, if you want to be a part of the third annual, we call them annuals, the third, the next National Symposium for Action Analytics, let us know, give us a card, send us an email. We'd be happy to share information about the next one coming up. Thank you very much.